Welcome to AI to AI, that is Appreciative Inquiry to Artificial Intelligence, a podcast series exploring the significance of appreciative inquiry, talent management, ethics and governance in the AI era, coaching-driven habit formation, creativity and adaptability. In today's fast-paced, technology-driven world, organizations must evolve quickly to remain competitive. While many focus on fixing problems, appreciative inquiry shifts the approach to identifying strengths and building on what already works. Combined with real-time strategic change, this enables organizations to make swift, collective decisions while engaging all levels, resulting in lasting transformation. In April 2013, I was leading both the HR and business excellence functions at Mahindra First Choice Wheels. My focus was on finalizing the TMW, that is Mahindra Group's TQM model report, into 2 to 3 days' time for the upcoming organizational assessment process by Mahindra's central team, that is called MIQ. Amidst this, our new CEO, Dr. Nagendra Palle, who preferred to be called Nagi, had just arrived at our Mumbai office from Bangalore. So Nagi, who had taken charge of MFCW on January 21, 2013, came with an impressive academic and professional background. While I was immersed in my work, a junior colleague rushed in to inform me that Nagi was calling me to the meeting room. In the meeting room, Nagi addressed the leadership team with a bold new vision. If you think we are in the business of buying and selling used cars, you are wrong. We are in the business of data. He proposed a radical shift in our vision statement to reflect this new focus on building a dominant Indian used car ecosystem that would bridge retail and wholesale marketplaces through both online and physical infrastructure. This concept of an ecosystem was revolutionary and counterintuitive for most of us. It challenged our traditional understanding of products, customers, and operational excellence. As someone with over a decade of business excellence, I initially struggled to grasp how we would cultivate customer-driven excellence in this new model. In a subsequent meeting in Bangalore, Nagi further explained that we were not in a traditional business with established rules. We were operating in a space that was ambiguous, unorganized, and fraught with inefficiencies. To succeed, we needed to adopt an entrepreneurial mindset and lead a digital transformation that would organize the Indian used car industry. Titles and designations were secondary. What mattered was our ability to innovate and deliver value to our dealers and customers. He urged us to move away from verticalized operations and instead foster synergy across our businesses, ensuring that they continuously fed data and insights to each other to refine our products and customer experiences. For many of us in the room, this was a wake-up call. Nagi was not interested in optimizing what already existed. He wanted us to create something entirely new. He emphasized the importance of staying asset-light, being attuned to the market, unspoken needs, and collaborating with colleagues and ecosystem partners to develop groundbreaking ideas. It was about experimentation, learning from the market, and scaling those learnings into tangible, profitable models. Nagi's vision demanded a sense of ownership, speed, creativity, and most importantly, the courage to take risk and scale successful innovations. Nagi's leadership style was transformative. He didn't bring in new people from outside, despite his vast network, because he believed that MFCW already had the potential to scale its existing business verticals into a dominant ecosystem. Today, I am joined by Dr. Nagendra Palle, fondly known as Nagi.
corporations and the small companies are often confused because what it takes to be entrepreneurial is completely counter to being a corporate environment because, like you said, TQM, I can't name one startup in the world that even can spell TQM, right? I mean, to some extent, I think corporations can tend to force a lot of these processes. But it's not that the processes don't have merit. There are elements of these things that apply to every company. You can't bureaucratically apply all these just like you go and apply it to an automotive company, which is a $5, $6 billion company, to a company that's just trying to wake up and try to make $3 million, right?
He's a distinguished leader with over 2 decades of global experience in the automotive industry. He currently serves as the director of Sovereign Solutions PT Limited, based in Singapore. From January 2013 to March 2018, Nagi was at the helm of Mahindra First Choice Wheels as its CEO, steering the company through a transformative phase in India's rapidly evolving used car industry. Before his impactful tenure at MFCW, Nagi worked with OpenLane in Redwood City, California, one of the premier online wholesale marketplaces in the United States, facilitating the sale of over 300,000 cars annually. His rich career spans various automotive domains, including R&D business planning, strategy, finance, mergers and acquisitions, and online vehicle retailing auctioning in globally renowned organizations like Ford Motor Company, Visteon Automotive Systems, A.T. Kearney, and Accenture LLP. Academically, Nagi is a powerhouse. He earned his B.Tech from IIT Madras, followed by an M.S. in Applied Mechanics from the Colorado School of Mines, and a Ph.D. in Mechanical Engineering from the University of Illinois. Adding to his stellar credentials, he also holds an MBA from the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, with distinction, specializing in finance and strategy. Nagi's thought leadership is reflected in his contributions as a speaker at prestigious platforms like The Economist, the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, and the Institute of Theoretical Physics at the University of California, Santa Barbara. His accomplishments include 2 U.S. patents, participation on Accenture's exclusive management consulting advisory panel, and winning A.T. Kearney's Great Client Work Award. He has also served on award committees for the National Science Foundation in Washington, D.C., and has been recognized for his expertise in both the corporate and academic worlds. In today's episode, we'll delve into the insights and experiences of Nagi, exploring his leadership journey, his contributions to the automotive industry, particularly to the used car ecosystem, and his vision for innovation in today's dynamic business environment. Now on to this insightful conversation with Nagi. Hello, Nagi. Welcome to my podcast, AI to AI, that is Appreciative Inquiry to Artificial Intelligence. Nagi, I'm delighted to have you here and have this conversation with you. I had opportunity to work with you at Mahindra First Choice Wheels, where you were CEO and Managing Director. And in fact, under your leadership, Nagi, this company was completely transformed from brick and mortar company to auto tech company. And, you know, the kind of mindset transformation you brought in, I mean, that was quite outstanding, I would say. And I often quote, you know, the various lines you used to say during my programs, Nagi. So we'll be sort of, you know, discussing about your worldview, your leadership style, all that. But before that, Nagi, if you could tell what are you doing nowadays and your company and all, that would be great.
So Thanks, Sanjay. I mean, I think it was in my 30 plus years of working, I think my experience at First Choice was probably the most wonderful. And it brought a number of things for me, right? Because I left India in 1988 after an undergrad, so never really understood India. But I think coming to First Choice at way later, I think I really enjoyed the experience working with all of you and also kind of working in India, etc. Since I left First Choice, I joined another startup, a small business. It was not that small. It was a late stage startup in the machine vision and machine learning space. And it was started by a couple of buddies of mine. So I went and helped them try to build a case to sell the business, which we did. And it got acquired by Motorola Solutions. And then since then, we have started another company based in Singapore called Sovereign Solutions. And it's again focused on what we call Global South, but really a GIS-based SaaS product that we are trying to figure out, not only to make, but also try to sell. But I'm based in San Francisco and, you know, work with people in Singapore and in India and other places. So that's kind of what I'm doing now.
Great. I mean, maybe sometime later, Nagi, I would like to know more about the company and your products and all that. So at present, let us sort of dive into, you know, your worldview, your leadership. You know, as goes my observation, your leadership style at Mahindra First Choice Wheels was very, very growth oriented, very innovation oriented. I remember that I had come from TQM background and all that. I was quite obsessed. Mm-hmm. And you sort of, you know, you told us that, you know, in startup, what type of mindset one should have. So if you could tell more about that, Nagi, that would be great.
Yeah, I won't claim to know. I mean, I didn't come with a formula, and I was trained in any particular way, but I operated largely on instinct, and my instinct was based on my own personal experience. And the one experience I had was working around the world in different parts of the world, whether it's China, in my prior career, right? So, I mean, there were some common themes that had emerged, and I'd also worked in small companies and large companies. And one of the things I really enjoyed was building smaller companies and being a part of small companies and helping them grow. And I think that's kind of what I saw as an opportunity in First Choice. Now, my experience was primarily based in, especially the startup experience was based in out of Silicon Valley and in California. And the culture there, of course, it's much written about, but every company is different and every person is different. When I joined First Choice as the CEO, the difference was that it was a small company, it was a startup in a big corporate structure.
Yes.
And in those situations, I find, and this is typical, and those situations I find that corporations and the small companies are often confused because what it takes to be entrepreneurial is completely counter to being a corporate environment. Because, like you said, TQM.
Yeah.
I can't name one startup in the world that even can spell TQM, right? I mean, to some extent, I think corporations can tend to force a lot of these processes. But it's not that the processes don't have merit. There are elements of these things that apply to every company.
Hmm.
You can't bureaucratically apply all these just like you go and apply it to an automotive company, which is a $5, $6 billion company, to a company that's just trying to wake up and try to make $3 million, right?
Yeah.
So the difference. But the problem is when you're in a corporate environment, a lot of these things are forced. But having said that, what I would say is that our experience at First Choice was very positive. And I think credit to the group, because when I came in, I didn't have any baggage. Yes. I didn't even come join the company to make a career in the group. I wanted to make that small company successful, because that was kind of my purpose. And so I didn't have any orientation in the big group, etc. But I wanted to bring an entrepreneurial culture. Right. Whatever I was used to, it was not because I was trying to come and change anything. I mean, I didn't even know what it was. It was not, I knew what the culture was. I just came and said, this is the business we got to build and let's do what it takes. And I still remember, I think this says a lot, which is I was in a board meeting and one of somebody said, because I was kind of saying, look, we need to move fast, right? We don't have money, right? We generate our own cash. Capital is always constrained. So we have to use money super efficiently and move fast. So as part of the big group, as far as financial controls go, I think that's great. I think I could use the support, whether it's compliance or financial controls, etc. But everything else, I think I should have the freedom to choose or not choose. Right. Now, at one of the board meetings, I think somebody said, "Hey, you're a little company in a big group, and you have to take the good with the bad, or you have to take the bad with the good." And I argued back, saying, "Why the hell should I take anything bad?" Right. You know, I just want the good. I mean, I want the land, and I want the resources, and I'm very selfish around the company, not about me,
but yes,
I should just use what I need. I don't need the TQM,
right,
for example. I mean, yeah. Are the principles of TQM and best practices? Maybe, but it's textbook stuff. You know, we'll figure it out. But the balance is, if you want to go to innovate and you want to fail, and eight out of things that we did didn't work, right? You could have used all the TQM and implemented the best process around an idea, but... Right. I mean, the whole thing was set up to fail many, many, many times. So what's the point, right? Yeah. So I think that was where I was coming from. So when you said growth, and I feel like I joined the company with, I came in from abroad, right? I didn't know anybody. Mm. I didn't know anybody in India.
Right.
So I said, we've got to use the team we got. I was not going to bring anybody new because right. I just didn't
know anybody. Yes.
And when you say growth, I always felt, and this is a principle I use in general, which is you have to grow the company, you have to grow the people also. Wow. People have to enjoy kind of what they do, yes. right? And it's not about testing them. It's about setting them up for success. Give them what they can do and grow in that versus give them something they can't do and test them and constantly tell them, look, you have to do this, that, and the other. And frankly, India was a new market to me, so I didn't know what to do. You know, I had to rely on people. But I did know a few things about the industry. I knew a few things about technology. I knew a few things about various aspects of the business. And I said, let's put our best foot forward. And I remember, as a company, we wanted to show profitability. And if you remember, Sanjay, one of the things we did was you need something to rally around. So we did two things. One is, within the first 60 days, I wrote a document around a long-term strategic vision and plan.
Yes. Yes.
And I wrote it based on talking to people, looking at the market and say, what can we do? And frankly, that fundamentally never changed over 6 years.
Right.
You could go ask anybody in the company, what are we trying to do? And they would sing from the same song sheet.
Yes.
They would tweak things along. There are ideas that didn't work, there are ideas that worked. But the basic thesis, the direction never changed. So that way you rallied people around. That's one thing. Second thing is we needed a short-term objective to get people motivated. And I said, this year we will make a profit of 1 rupee.
Right. Yes, yes.
You remember?
Yeah, of course, yes.
Which required both, right? Which required growing revenues. You can't, in a small company, you can't cut costs to profitability. Because you need the revenue to pay bills and you need margin to pay bills. So we said we will invest judiciously to grow the revenue where we can, but also manage costs. And remember, we used to have daily calls to see. And you know what? That was the first year the company was profitable.
Yes, yes.
A long time. Second thing we did was, I remember there was a need for capital and we wanted to raise money from a different kind of investor.
Yes.
and we went on a roadshow to raise money from strategic investors, which we did. And that brought a different mindset, because the pitch you make to external investors versus internal investors in a group are very different. Yes. Because the external investors, people forget often that it's not about liking the business. It's like you have to answer the question, what are they going to get? If I put money, they're focused on making, they're taking somebody else's money. They're trying to figure out what money they're going to make. And that's very important. Versus if you take the money from the group, they're going to say, okay, who's the management? Who's on the board? And what is your, you know, it's a very different mindset. And so we raised money from the outside, and that rallied people together. And I think that motivated people also, because the pitch was different. The funding strategy was different. And we had a story to tell externally, right? Yes. And so I think a lot of these things brought people together. In the end, you know, if there is clarity on a day-to-day basis on what you have to do, then it's about making sure people are aligned, they understand. And don't get caught up in the bullshit, right? I mean, protect, have their back, right? Have their back. For example, you know, there should be a lot of transparency around performance, right? Good people should get rewarded. Yes. And, you know, for example, I think we deviated from group norms, right? People, we were handed down targets and average increments and this, that, and the other. I said, fine, we'll use the average increment number, but the distribution is going to be waived. And Sanjay used to help me do that, which is high performers and good talent and good people who worked hard. They got rewarded disproportionately higher than those who were going along for the ride. And we were very transparent about it. I mean, there were no favorites because I didn't know anybody. It was just literally, you know, literally people knowing that if they did well, they would get rewarded and it happened. So the reward structure was good. The culture, I think, people often ask me, you know, you talk about culture. There was a great culture we developed. And how do you define the culture? And there's a lot of essays written on it. And everybody has a different view. And there's people much smarter than me, gurus, who write about culture. But to me, culture is defined by how employees talk to each other.
Great.
You know,
that's a great,
Are they able to articulate what they're doing? Do they respect the other person in terms of what they are doing?
Yes.
And understand why they're doing what they're doing. Mm. Understand why you're doing what you're doing, and how they communicate with each other is the thread that binds the culture across the company. So, all in all, I think we built a fun culture, a very transparent culture.
Yes.
We didn't have a lot of money, but we still had fun, you know, in small groups. We built a reward structure, and then we had their back. We made it, we were focused on doing things that were important. And I took on kind of this thing of going to the group. I forget what it used to be called, not TQM, but they used to do another thing. Right?
PMW.
TMW. I mean, that was another one where, and you know, I brought a certain, my style was a little bit casual. Sometimes it was perceived a little different. Why am I casual? It's not like I'm not rigorous. I mean, I am fairly rigorous. I can be.
Yes.
Analytics. But that's not the be-all and end-all. What's the point of somebody appreciating that you're rigorous? That's not the point. Are people comfortable with you, right? And I remember very early on, I was a new CEO in the group, and you know, there were always questions around, oh, how is this new guy, etc. And one of the comments that was made about me was, oh, he's okay. I think he's smart, but I think he's very casual. I don't know if he'll fit in, right? And secondly, the reason I bring that up is this is, what was that program again that you mentioned just now?
TMW, the Mahindra Way.
The Mahindra Way, which is around quality and all that, which is great. I mean, I think it has fantastic basis for large companies. And the first meeting I had a very clear strategic vision. And I knew more about the industry and the business than anybody reviewing. So I put a strategic plan together. And the first comment that was made was because I didn't fit the strategy template that somebody had. And they commented that, oh, I got a very low score on strategy. And I'm like, what do you know?
Right.
But then I had the team's back, right? I took that on and I said, look, we're going to do what we're going to do. And I don't care what you say, right? And the good news was that I also got a lot of support from the group as well, because I think eventually we were doing well. We raised money. Right. We We built a great culture. And I think the testament was we were a magnet for recruiting in the
group. Yes.
Every MBA graduate who came and
yes.
GMC,
Group Maha, Managing
Partner. When they recruited for MBA, we were a magnet. People wanted to work in this small company in a big group because they heard that it was fun and, you know, they would grow in the business. And we were a magnet. That said everything to me,
yeah.
right?
Yes, yes.
And to others. So I think those are some of the things we did. And it was not out of any particular training or plan, but just being honest about kind of what was needed.
Great. Let us take a short break. When we come back from the break.
But in our case, behind the brand and the retail footprint was, we had a very flourishing transaction business in the vehicle side of the data. And the idea was, how do you use all that data to take it back into the retail world so that we are positioned as a company that understands data and are actually running the company based on data, data exhaust, as we call it in California, right?
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. Let us dive right back into the episode. It was like, you know, traveling down the sort of memory lane and again, sort of, you know, remembering all those, your lines, which were quite disruptive, by the way, let me tell you, very, very counterintuitive to us. And it was like wake up call for both, for most of us, in fact, Nagi. But then we realized that, you know, what you are actually telling us is the way forward, so to speak. And for me, I can tell you there was a huge learning, because it was counterintuitive. And then I realized that, no, this is the new sort of, you know, new truth, new realization. And unless we kind of follow this path, we can't survive as a brick and mortar used car company, so to speak.
Right.
And as you had mentioned that we are not in used car business, we are in the business of data and all that. So
the ecosystem aspect of it, I think we had a real opportunity to build an ecosystem between technology and the traditional retail business, because we had some rights to win. You know, you always have to be very clear about what's your right to win in a business, right? And it could be many things, right? It could be brand, it could be some sort of intellectual property, it could be data, it could be people, you know, it could be many things. And most companies will have many things as rights to win. But in our case, behind the brand and the retail footprint was, we had a very flourishing transaction business in the vehicle side of the data. And the idea was, how do you use all that data to take it back into the retail world so that we are positioned as a company that understands data and are actually running the company based on data, data exhaust, as we call it in California, right? There's a huge data exhaust in terms of, as we are in the retail business and wholesale business, we're collecting so much data. How do you make it a virtuous cycle in terms of using the data to grow the business and to launch new products and have confidence out there that you are better than others, you know?
Right.
I think that was pretty helpful.
Yeah. So, Nagi, before we move ahead, you know, you mentioned that you had come with instinct and not baggages, so to speak. And I must tell you that, you know, these leadership instincts is very, very important, so to speak, to run an organization which is in startup environment, so to speak, which is startup organization. And, you know, in countries like India, where this used car industry is still, I would say, kind of, you know, not very developed, so to speak. So there, I think instinct, I think that works well and worked well, very well in your case. So could you tell that how leaders can develop, you know, this instinct, Nagi?
I think it's both instincts and humility. I think, I mean, to me, instinct came from just having some experience in a similar industry in the business. The humility came, not humility. I mean, I also, it's not like I came in knowing what to do, right? I mean, I didn't know India. I may have known used cars, I may have the automotive industry, I knew data, I knew analytics, but I didn't know the India at all. And this is a pretty traditional used auto business in the country. So when I came in, one of the things, from an instinct standpoint, I knew there was lots of building blocks that we had to build to succeed. That was the instinct part, which is we knew, I knew, because certain principles of the industry don't change, right?
Right.
The buyer and seller and what are the things you need to do to make the transaction happen. But on the other side, like I came in and there was a retail business and I said, I don't know that much about the retail business, but we have a wholesale business, which I understand well. So I'm going to spend the first 3 months learning about the retail and not interfering and telling them what to do because I didn't know anything. So I learned first 3 months. I said, let me get credibility by learning as opposed to telling. And on the wholesale side, which was an underserved business in our company, we said, let me push that and grow that. And that turned out to be the right thing. Whether that's instinct or design, I don't know. But I think that was partly where it all started.
Right. Great. Nagi, so, you know, while sort of, you know, dealing with people, I always felt that your approach was allowing people to experiment, fail fast, fail cheap kind of, you know, approach. And you also gave more importance, be it interview or any other conversation, you gave more importance to mindset of people than the credentials, so to speak. So could you please tell more about, you know, this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we wanted more doers than tellers, you know, we wanted more because we were a small company. We didn't have that much hierarchy. I mean, I didn't even have that much hierarchy, you know. So when we interviewed people, there would be people who would come and say, oh, I'm growing, I'm a manager, and I manage X number of people, and that didn't do anything for me. You know, I mean, you have to come and figure it out. I still remember, and I believed in recruiting just good people, and without even knowing if we had a job or not. One person we recruited, I still remember, and he was a GMC finishing up his rotation, and I was very keen for him to join. Hmm. And he asked me, sort of, what's the role? I said, I don't know. You come and do whatever you want. I think you'll do good things. I didn't even have a role for him, and we recruited, and it turned out to be one of the better decisions, right? Went on to become a product manager, did great things, etc.
Yes.
So, and it's that mindset, right? Which is, even while recruiting, interviewing CFOs, I remember they were, because in a big company, you have very, very traditional CFOs. And so we had one of the CFOs was moving on. We had to get a new one. And there were candidates who would come and say they were really tight on controls and they knew how to do the books, etc. And in an environment which is a startup and you're trying to experiment things, you need leeway. I'm not talking about not having controls, but I'm talking about allowing people to do things and in a constructive manner. So a great analogy of the CFO we eventually recruited was great because he said, look, the role of finance is, think of it as a river flowing down and with two riverbanks. Mm. And I said, look, I think the role of finance is, something fell. The role of finance is that you have riverbanks and the water is flowing. Within the banks, the water can flow any which way. And I think that's a great analogy for allowing people to innovate and experiment, etc. As long as there are boundaries set and constraints and people have the flexibility within that. So that's the environment you need to create. It's not just finance, it's even day-to-day, etc. Right. More than anything else, I think things work great. If things don't work, there should not be a witch hunt. You know, people should trust that it's fine. You know, we learn something and we move on.
Yeah, great. You mentioned that, you know, Sanjay, I believe that, you know, let people, people should come, you know, well trained on a particular thing, and we should not unnecessarily send them for training programs. They should kind of learn by doing the thing. So if you could tell, that was also counterintuitive. Later on, I learned and, you know.
Yeah, again, it goes back to the mindset thing, which is if you go to California and you look at kind of the startup culture and entrepreneurship, they don't have freaking any time or money to get people sent for training. You have to have people who are just hungry. Wow. And most of the corporate training that you get, you can probably, like a whole day course, you can get in 20 minutes. That's my philosophy. and especially in an environment which has no time, right? So in that sense, I think you recruit people who are willing to learn and who are hungry, and they'll be fine. And as far as skills go, you can still have people. I still remember we signed up for, not that I didn't believe in people learning. I think we subscribed to one of these online universities, global universities, which had courses. And I said, look, hey, we're going to sign up, and anybody who finishes a course gets like a 500 rupee coupon to go have coffee or something, right? And because I believe in that, but that had their own time. And even more important, I said, I didn't care what they trained themselves on. I still remember one person went and taught themselves how to play the guitar on that course. And I was totally surprised.
Yes.
Because I think you need a learning culture, but you don't need a learning culture imposed by a corporation.
Right.
If those who want to learn should go learn, but we provide them enough opportunities to learn on the job on a day-to-day basis. And I think, you know, and the challenges are fine. And we had enough people to spend time with people who were working so that they learned on the job. And I think you can see the people we turned out were really, really good over 3 or 4 years.
Right. So, great. Now, Nagi, tell me, you know, the way this AI and ML, you know, is growing, so to speak, and replacing the routine jobs. And why only routine jobs? In fact, you know, even the intelligent cognitive jobs as well. What is the future? I mean, how people at large should groom themselves, prepare themselves? And what is the role of leadership in this?
I think the jobs, at least, I mean, again, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but, you know, the more you read about it and the more you see what's going on, I think the idea of hardcore software engineering portions of it are getting automated really fast. Second thing is that knowledge itself is not a differentiator. So for a long time, you could go and say, I have 30 years of experience doing something. You can replace that with two questions, right? You know, so there's no, but on the human element side, I think it'll still be valuable. I think the importance of liberal arts, I think, will grow. I think the idea of lateral thinking, the right brain and the left brain thinking, I think is going to be more important. The creativity, in spite of everything that AI can do, there still has to be a creative element of it. And I think one has to be a lot faster in delivering, because there are companies who are going to do things so fast because of the technology and tools available. You have to be very aware. But having said all that, I think the business aspects will still remain. You still have to deliver cash, yes. Right? In the business, just because you can do all those things doesn't mean cash is coming in. You know? Might give you a competitive edge. So I think the selling skills, the liberal arts skills, the innovation aspect, I think those things will still remain. And I think the business, the way I think about it is there is any business has kind of three aspects to it. There is a business model aspect of it. There's an operating model aspect to it. And there's an economic model aspect to it. So if you think of those three buckets in a business, I think the business model aspect still has to be thought through.
Right.
You know, if I spend a dollar doing something, I have to make more than a dollar, right? So what is the model that gets me that? Same thing with the economics. But I think where it will impact the most is the operating model, whether it is operations and technology, operations and support, sales operations. A lot of those things are going to get automated really quick. So right. To the extent that the way I think of it is a lot of overhead activities are going to get eliminated, you know?
Right.
And but the other aspects will still remain. You still have to make money.
I would like you to sort of, you know, give some message to the leaders of startup companies, so to speak, in India, how they should see the things. Okay, because, I mean, there is a lot of roller coaster, so to speak. Okay, so, yeah. So, your view, Nagi.
I think, and again, there are enough smart people out there who can tell you more. But the way I think of when you're trying to create a business, there are two kinds of businesses fundamentally that you create in a startup environment. One is where you are so innovative and you're building something so unique that the intellectual property is going to be valued and you will exit based on that because you have done something so creative. The other is you're building a business where you are trying to build a business for revenue and cash flows, etc. Right up front, you have to be very clear what kind of business you're building. And depending on that, you will invest and you will operate very differently. And I would say 90%+ of the companies in the world are the second category. So in the end, focus on the business, right? Focus on the business and cash flows have a line of sight towards that. And I think, and that's hard, you know, that is super. Building a business is very hard.
Very hard. True.
Very hard. And most of them don't succeed. So odds are against you. But I think there is no other way to spend life other than trying to build businesses.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Superb. Nagi, this brings us to the end. It was very clear, free-flowing, very candid conversation with you, Nagi, as usual. I mean, yeah. You are very clear, very straightforward, so to speak. And for me, huge learning. Anything else you would like to say otherwise?
No, all good, Sanjay. I haven't met you in a while. So at some point, we have to grab a cup of tea someplace.
sure, Nagi. Please do let me know whenever you are in India or I am that part of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
We'll catch up.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to my podcast, AI to AI, where we explore the significance of process excellence and people excellence in the age of artificial intelligence. If you like this episode, give us a thumbs up in your favorite podcast app and do subscribe to continue listening to upcoming episodes with industry experts. Feel free to connect with me through my website at www.sn10x.in and on LinkedIn, where you can find me under the tagline Molding Metal to Molding Minds.